You are listening to John Diard's Life Spa, your premier source for health news and Ayurveda, where modern science meets ancient wisdom.
Hi, everybody. I'm Dr. John Diard, and welcome to the Life Spa podcast, where we prove the ancient medical wisdom of Ayurveda with modern science. And today, we have a special guest, Dr. Nidhi Panchali Panda, and she's an Ayurvedic practitioner, author of a new book called Your Body Already Knows. And I'm super excited to have her. She has learned Ayurveda in India. She learned from her grandfather, and she has applied this knowledge in an extremely practical way, which I think you're going to love. So please enjoy this podcast. And if you're watching this podcast on YouTube or on any other platform, please like and subscribe. If you're watching it on our website at lifespa.com, please also sign up for our newsletter so you get this information about what we do at Life Spa on a regular basis. And also check out our Ayurvedic store on your way out at store.lifespa.com. All right, let's bring on Dr. Nidhi. So you wrote this book, which I think is an amazing title, Your Body Already Knows. Tell me what that means and why you wrote this book.
Yeah. So your body already knows means that we have the intelligence that it takes to make decisions and live a life that creates health and happiness. Now, in our primitive state, right? And of course, there's great advantages to becoming these intellectual mammals that we've become. But really, instinctively, a baby is born without ever having used its mouth in utero. And once it's born, it looks for its mother's breast. It knows how to eat. It knows how much it wants to eat. And it's perfectly in sync with its own body's needs. Similarly, we as human beings are supposed to know. Animals know it, right? We look at a deer outside in the forest. The deer knows that it's herbivorous. It doesn't need a nutritionist to tell it so. Tigers don't get carried away with waking up at 5 a.m. and the advantages of such. And they understand they're nocturnal. In fact, animals, when they get sick, bears, before they hibernate, they eat cabbage heads first because they know that once they come back from hibernation, that cabbage is going to help them to have a nice big bowel movement. So all species on the planet already know what they need to be well, to stay well, and in fact, even recover from disease. The world that we've come to, right, while I said that our intellect is our greatest gift and sometimes can be our greatest enemy, that we've really been conditioned, we've used our minds so much more than we need to, that we've lost that cellular intelligence that we all carry to live in a way that brings ease. So the idea of Your Body Already Knows is to create a framework which will take us back to undoing of all of that and really connecting at the deepest level with the universe's rhythms, cycles, so that we can live with ease.
I love that concept, but it's so complicated in this day and age because there's so many sort of seemingly logical ways to eat. Let's just take that craziness, for example. We have the carnivore diet. We have full, you know, vegan vegetarians. We have raw foodists. And everybody makes the case that this is the way, not really the vegetarians, because everybody knows hunter-gatherers were meat eaters, but I just wonder what your take is on all of that. It seems like even though we kind of know how we eat, we've intellectually applied logic to make your own case, as opposed to having logic that understands the underlying laws of nature that make the most sense. So what's your take on kind of solving the craziness problem of diets?
Right. And I say, you know, when in doubt, actually looking at our ancestors really helps. So, I mean, that's a great starting point. For me, I'm like, if this fad hasn't seen somebody from their cradle to their grave, at least two or three generations like that, I'm not even buying into it. But The underlying principle, right? Like I personally believe that people can and should make their own food choices, whether you want to be vegan, whether you want to be vegetarian, or whether you want to be carnivorous or herbivorous, right? While I may have my own preferences, my ask is different from that. My ask is identifying how do we cook our foods? How do we eat our foods? What really led us to becoming human? So, for example, I want to fight the biggest battles. I think we've gone too far into fighting the smallest battles, ingredients, micronutrients, but we've forgotten how to eat holistically in a way that nourishes us and brings us joy, in a way that our ancestors ate. So really, I go back into the first principle of what made us human. And if you do, right, we're going back to science, if you do research, right, I mean, you do research, and this is out there, not by the Ayurvedic population, not for the Ayurvedic population, but researchers, scientists discovered that when we invented fire and started using fire to cook our foods, that's when our gut microbiome changed. Our brains became larger. It is what made us human. So I say, if nothing else, and you know, let's talk later about what you choose to eat, but let's first talk about how do you prepare your food. So the idea of cooking is what made us human. My first ask is at least get back there. The second, the way I teach it is let's go back to just logical principles. We are warm-blooded mammals, right? Dr. Duyard, we are warm-blooded mammals. And we have a certain way of operating. A climate that our body has an inner climate. Everything in this universe, every species, every life, every living species has an optimum climate that they thrive in. For example, if you were to get a seed, like let's just say you want to grow tomatoes, you know that you could not grow them in Alaska. You're living in Alaska, you have the desire to grow tomatoes. You'd have to do a lot of modification to be able to grow tomatoes in Alaska. Similarly, our body is home to trillions of microorganisms, what we call the microbiome, which really keeps us thriving now. And just like everything else on the planet, they have a certain optimum climate that they can thrive the best in. And that climate is this warm and moist climate. So we are warm-blooded mammals. We like to cook our foods. Now it is your choice how you bring in that warm and moist. So when it comes to food specifically, I say let's work with principles and not prescriptions. Now, in this case, when I'm talking about this inner climate, which is warm and moist, I'm saying cook your foods, it releases moisture, warm, great. You feel nourished as well. Test it for yourself. You want to add spices to your food, good fats to your food. Again, spices bring in the warmth, the good fats bring in the moisture. When you look at the greatest diets of the world and we talk about macrobiotic revolution, little fermented foods, it's the same principle again. Fermentation is this process that kind of generates heat, is aerobic. There's always water involved, again, brings us back to warm and moist. So, my ask is let's look at the principles. Let's go back to see how your ancestors ate. Let's try it on your body, and you experience within 3 or 4 weeks what it does for you. I don't envision, I've actually done this experiment where I've asked, for example, a lot of people that if you were ever stranded on, if you were ever stranded in a forest, right, where there's all of this raw food, would you imagine feeling very nourished eating all of that after a few days, eating those raw foods? And the answer is no. You know, it's appealing for a short period of time. So we want to really come back to all of this evidence, look at our ancestors, try it, and then draw our own conclusions. But I think getting very prescriptive rather than principle-based is really what has led to this overwhelming confusion in the wellness world out there today.
You know, and that's the beauty of Ayurveda is that, you know, it's time tested. It's been around for thousands of years. The All Indian Ayurvedic Congress is still one of, if not the largest medical organization in the world still to this date. Yet, Ayurveda seems to be still unrecognized here in the West as much as you and myself and so many others have tried to kind of beat the drum and kind of shake the building of ancient wisdom and modern science together makes so much logical sense. You know, if it's time tested and it has science to back it up, it something we should at least look at. And I wonder, you know, this is a little bit off topic, but I wonder, what do you think is the reason why Ayurveda hasn't really caught on? What's the reason why people have? Because what you're saying makes perfect sense. We should look at our ancestors. This is what the Vedas did. They studied nature. It's thousands of years of time-tested wisdom. It's eating seasonally. It's recognizing circadian rhythms. It's understanding recognizable food and whole foods. All these things are like, major topics in the longevity and health world today. Yet somehow Ayurveda doesn't get the credit. Not that credit means that much, but it surely, Ayurveda digs so much deeper than just, eat this food or eat that, like you said, a prescription.
But to be honest with you, I think that the reason for this is that we've become such sensory beings, outward beings, right? The amount of information that we have today, the world is flat. And yes, it's amazing that we can have access to what's happening in every part of the world. In fact, even outer space, right? But at the same time, we're so bombarded with so much information and so much conditioning, so much noise out there that we really have forgotten that we have this deep knowing within that we were born with as babies. So I genuinely feel it is that whole, plus the marketing, right? So that noise, the fear, the marketing, the more you know, the less you know. The more you know, the more confusion you have. And I think we've started using our senses as a primary source of knowledge and information. To me, that's all information. We're disconnected from our wisdom. And in Ayurveda, the first cause of disease is loss of wisdom. So while this is at the root cause of the problem, that we're so disconnected and there's so many experts, each one selling a new solution, but there's also heavy marketing, right? I mean, the world is selling what you can pay for. So whether it's pharmaceuticals, whether it's other industries, there is heavy marketing around those. They create disease and then they solve disease. I mean, that is the classic model. So Ayurveda wants to take you away from it. Nobody's making money. It's the ultimate model of living a chronic disease-free life. And that is really primarily the work I have done. Chronic disease rapidly, right? It's exponentially increased since, around mid 1950s, and even more so in the last 20 years. And if you look at what has happened, right, Dr. Tuyar, and you and I both know that, is that the invention of refrigeration using electricity in the last 200 years. So we have these temperature-controlled environments. We can store our foods for days because of refrigeration. We can stay up at all hours. People believe they're nocturnal beings. I really doubt 200 years ago anybody was sitting with a lamp outside while everybody was sleeping, saying I was nocturnal. We really have gone against and away from the rhythms. You want to bring in science, right? I tell people, you want to bring in science, go and look at the science out there. Chronic disease did not exist the way it exists today, 200 years ago. Look at all the developments that have happened. While we use science to prove theories, some of these scientific advancements have not been used in a manner that serves us.
It's even more recent than that, since World War II, and even in the 1970s, there was very little chronic disease. It's only recently that, big pharma started funding the NIH, and big pharma started funding 80% of the funding for these medical schools. Harvard, Stanford are funded by big pharma. So we have research that's being done that's not being done on connecting the dots and looking outside of that this particular drug will be the cure for this particular disease, without looking at how that disease got there and who the person is who has that disease, is something that is actually not happening in our medical institutions today. And that's why Ayurveda and other natural sources of information are so critical, although they're being stamped out by this pharmaceutical way of being, that a pill is going to solve your problem. Now, right now they're giving Ozempic to 6-year-olds. I mean, and the government is funding that process. It's just sort of an amazing thing that's happening in our culture, which is why we need the information that you're preaching so much more than ever before, because kids are chronically obese. Kids are chronically with having, pre-diabetes and diabetes and Alzheimer's. This year is the highest rate of Alzheimer's ever. So we haven't solved that problem. We keep making things worse as we keep trying to throw a pill at it. So I love what you're doing. The message We have to keep beating the pavement and getting it out. And when you have something like Ayurveda that is time tested, it's been around for thousands and thousands of years. You don't even have to go back 200 years. I mean, right now, there's 6 billion tons of pesticides dumped on foods around the world. 8 billion tons of plastics are being dumped in the environment every year. So we have real kind of major issues to, and we really need to wake up. We can't just go to the grocery store and buy stuff in a package. We really can't do that. Like you're saying before, refrigeration, people had to get stuff from the local market that was grown locally. It was organic because there were no such thing as pesticides. And we ate in this a food that was very recognizable. Everybody knew what they were eating. There weren't unknown chemicals in our foods. So I really applaud you for what you're doing. And I want to talk about your book and dive in a little bit more. You talk about something called the inner climate. And I'd love to kind of dive into that a little bit. What does that mean?
Right. And I briefly spoke about this right here on our podcast, but I'm going to, just start at the top again. Right? The whole idea that that life exists and thrives when the climate is right for that life. Right? So our planet is the only planet where life exists, the entire solar system. In fact, the entire Milky Way. We've at least so far not discovered life on any other planet. And life exists on our planet for 4.5 billion years. It has so because the climate was right. And from single cell organisms, effortlessly, without any scientific intervention, we've just grown and grown and trillions of species living on this planet. And now when the climate is wrong, we're actually questioning the very existence of life on our planet. Similarly, I'm going to go back to the idea that our body is universe to trillions of microorganisms, the microbiome. There's a climate when, more and more every day, and I'm bringing science into it because we like that scientific understanding. But every day, more and more scientists are amazed and when they discover that our immune system, our nervous regulation, we started off talking about gut and the microbiome, but they're realizing almost everything, Alzheimer's, neurodegenerative disorders, so much is connected. And how we heal, how we deal with disease, how moods, our mental health is so connected to our microbiome. Just like all life, they have a certain climate in which they thrive. And that climate is really what I'm bringing to place. In fact, if you look at, and I'm going to talk about what that is, but when we go backwards and look at all Ayurveda principles, everything that Ayurveda talks about, sadvrutta, dinacharya, how do you live in a manner which does not create disease? It's all bringing you to this ideal climate. What is that climate? That climate inside our bodies is warm and moist, just like our breath. As the mother's milk, our reproductive fluids, just being, like I said, warm-blooded, and even our microbiome, right? We know that as is the macro, such is the micro. Philosophers around the world have used this concept for thousands of years, whether it's Hippocrates or whether it's Ayurveda, that you look outside to study the insides. And warm and moist is where most flora and fauna outside in the world. You have the richest form of life where there is the highest warmth and moisture. Similarly, our gut, which they called the probiotic environment, which used to be called flora and fauna, thrives in this warm and moist environment. But I take it even further. I said, don't just believe me. Let's just think about it, right? What are the people we gravitate towards? Not hot-tempered, not cold. We like warm people. Nobody ever teaches us what is this intrinsic warmth, right? We're in a room. Anytime, if you're feeling dry, you'll notice. If you're feeling sticky and slimy, you'll notice. But if you have the right amount of moisture, you'll have that comfort. Human beings outside in our nervous systems, in our minds, all our comfort foods are warm and moist. The whole idea is how do you live a life that keeps you in that warm and moist? Looking at Ayurvedic doshas, Ayurveda says that, the first definition of swastha or health is samadosha, three doshas in balance, kapha, pitta, vata. What is that state in which all the three doshas are in balance, right? Kapha is too cold and humid. To balance it, we would bring it to the center of warm and moist. We couldn't go too hot because then we would trigger pitta. Pitta is hot and humid. To balance pitta, again, you would bring it to the center. You can't go too cold because then you would aggravate kapha. Or you would trigger vata. So you stop at warm and moist. Similarly, vata, it's cold and dry, right? Vata qualities are cold and dry. You come back to warm and moist. Warm and moist is that place where none of the three doshas are aggravated. None of their qualities can be triggered because this is that perfect place of equilibrium. So my idea, so the book presents this idea that when we start understanding how to live in this warm and moist space, in our foods, in our lifestyles, in our mindset, in our state of being, like even our state of being, when we feel triggered, we can instantly notice the heat and dryness inside. Anger is hot, stress is hot and dry. Love, compassion, gratitude are all warm and moist. So in the book, I teach people systematically how to keep coming back to this warm and moist. If they are hot and inflamed, and inflammation is such a big problem, or they have toxic waste and they have all this slime accumulated in the body, our body stops flowing, it stops circulating. The leading cause of chronic disease is the deviation from this inner climate. So I want to simplify health again. I want to simplify the idea that with this principle, which you can apply to all areas of your life, you can bring back health. I have found remarkable results in my own practice, right? People who've tried 100 fragmented solutions, even Ayurvedic, for their 100 problems, but have not been able to find one coherent thread that works, have suddenly remarkably found that their migraines are better, their periods are regular, they're having bowel movements, but more than anything, they're just in a better mood because they start cultivating that warm and moist mindset. So the idea is let's bring back the climate. Where climate is right, life will thrive. It wants to thrive. Life wants life. You just need the climate to be right.
So specifically, what would people do to restore the warm and moist environment?
So I would say, of course, right, if you want to restore, it first requires identifying where your inner climate lies. So whether you've been too hot, inflamed, humid, and I systematically present a chart, you know, where people can assess their inner climates. So whether you've gone too hot and dry, you have dry eczema, you're feeling burnt out in your nervous system, you know, you feel loss of prana. Or you've gone too cold and dry, very, very depleted. Again, loss of prana, inability to put on weight, anxiety, bloating, sleepless nights. So each one has its own symptoms and how it starts to present and then how it turns into disease. But let's say you didn't want to do that. Let's just say that, hey, that's too tedious for me. I'm unsure. I don't want to go that route. It's still fine. I grew up with an Ayurvedic family. It's still fine to just start following everyday principles of living in this manner. For example, that you would wake up one day and say, I am going, how do you bring warm and moist into your foods? You said, like we said, we cook your foods, use good fats, you'd use good spices. If your body can afford it, small amounts of fermented food, again, that's warm and moist. So you keep this concept alive and just test it for yourself. Similarly, you can bring this warmth and moisture in every single area of your life. And that, you know, even you look at the gut, right? I say the gut is the mucus lining protecting us from hot acids. Perfect place of warmth and moisture everywhere. It's fuel and it's fire. And you bring them together, you can sustain the fuel. So you can sustain the fire. Once the fuel can sustain the fire, life can emerge and thrive. And transformation can keep happening, building can happen, and that decline happens at its own pace. So identifying your inner climate is great, and then restoring it, tweaking it accordingly. But even if that were not to happen, and even if you just took the principles of warm and moist and you applied it to all areas of your life, you would find sufficient results.
Nice, nice. So, I would say that, in the idea of the warm and moist, we have an environment which is extremely dry and cold and fast. So everybody's eating cold food, everybody's going 90 miles an hour. So we have this kind of vata nervous system aggravation. So let's just say that's the more common condition that we have in our culture. So, what would be a good breakfast for that person, and a good lunch and a good supper for that person to kind of balance their nervous system, give them better sleep, kind of lubricate their joints, lubricate their guts so they can move their bowels regularly, all these things that go wrong when they're not moist and warm, they're dry and cold.
No, absolutely, right? Like, and I think what that has resulted in, like you said, that our go, go, go culture has resulted more in like this solar aspect, right? Like dehydrated aspect, hot and dry. That because our minds are hot, 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 go, 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 go. And the foods could be cold, could be overly processed. Again, you know, lots of medication, lots of caffeine, lots of alcohol. Even though we are consuming cold beverages in the name of health, like cold smoothies, cold juices, but there's also an equal amount of consumption of caffeine and alcohol. Again, both hot and dry. And we understand this inherently, right? People can say, oh, I had so much to drink last night. Now I'm feeling dehydrated. You have caffeine, you feel overly stimulated, and then you have this dryness, kind of this lack of energy that you feel within. So you're absolutely right, right? Our entire generation, we're suffering from overproductivity, solar syndrome, just being hot and dry the entire time. And I say, while it's great to look at breakfast, and we will, I say you need a holistic approach. You need to kind of restore all elements of moisture in your life. You know, you want to bring back the lunar. It's like long daytimes and no nighttime, no repair time. So a breakfast for such a person, and almost for anybody, would be something warm and moist. So rice congee with a little bit of ginger powder is one of my favorite breakfasts for somebody like that, or hot cooked spiced milk. And the reason why, you know, again, you bring in the spices, because when you're eating moist foods, those spices will help to break down the food. You know, I find it so funny that what doctors today are putting in supplements and capsules, we put in our foods, you know, the anti-inflammatories, the antioxidants, the adaptogens. So you always want that extra support to break down your food. So whether it's a porridge with a good spice, whether you want to put cinnamon, you want to put cardamom, you want to put black pepper, a porridge with a spice, a rice congee with a spice, a hot cup of cooked milk with maybe almonds and, you know, dates on the side. That's my favorite breakfast. But something warm, something spiced, just to get that fire started in the morning. Because of course, that's the second principle of the framework is, right, you want to live in according to the cycles of the sun and the moon. So in the morning, when it's sluggish, you want to bring in that extra spice even more. But more than that, right, when I work with people who are completely hot and dry, Dr. Duyard, I'm like, go all out. I teach them the breathing, you know, breathing techniques, alternate nostril breathing, resonance breathing, breath, so you can start cultivating moisture. Tools, so you can start regulating your nervous system to come back to that sense of being all the time. How you sleep, how you interact, how much caffeine you take in, all of those simple tweaks. And I don't say give up anything you love, but let's tweak it. Let's tweak when you consume it, how you consume it, how often you consume it. You can still live the life that you dream of loving. You can live in the modern city. I live in New York City. I'm raising my two daughters, devout teenage daughters. And I know I can live in this manner. I can go, I can travel. I travel a ton. I live like a normal human being, and it's possible to live that way, bringing in those principles by cultivating that moisture that we've lost as a generation. And Abhyanga, by the way, the most important, I would say, is oil massage, warm and moist. In Ayurveda, the oil that is always recommended is some form of sesame oil, you know, herbed, medicated sesame oil. And again, classic example of warmth and moisture, right? I mean, all of every Ayurvedic practice is bringing you back towards warmth and moisture. That's basically what it's doing.
I love that. And going back to the spices, I recently wrote an article about some of the science for spicing your food, which is a lost art in the American culture, that's for sure. And I want to make a case for why you should do exactly what Nidhi is telling us to do, which is spice your food. When you heat and cook your food, there are issues. The food breaks down. When you cook starch, you get these toxic chemical byproducts called acrylamides. When you cook your meat, you get what are called heterocyclic amines. You can also get glycation end products, which actually are when you heat any type of food. Well, study after study after study shows that when you actually spice your food, when you sprinkle ginger and cumin and coriander and fennel and cardamom and all these spices have different properties, but they generally speaking, all of them protect from the damage of cooking, which is sort of an amazing concept that
Beautiful.
cooking definitely breaks things down in a good way, but it also has a little bit of a damage if you overcook or overheat or heat things too much too fast. And we do that really well in America, where the spicing really creates this incredible benefit. Not to mention, it makes your digestion stronger and it does create the warmth so the food can be warm and moist at the same time. But so, you know, I kind of think that I wrote this article recently. It's coming out soon. I feel like, after you read that article, you'll never not spice your food again when you read the science behind
Love
it, because
it.
it's so compelling to do that.
I just love it. I love it. Can I add to that for a second? So many metabolic processes in the body leave free radicals, right? And we know that free radicals need antioxidants, and most of these cycles are antioxidants. So I can imagine that with the process of cooking and that metabolic process of cooking, while we don't call it free radicals, but all the toxins that are released in the foods again need that same quality of antioxidants, that protection that comes from spices.
Yeah, it's so true, and it's just a lost art. I mean, wars were fought. Cities in Europe became wealthy because of the spice trade, and because it was people were just they just couldn't get enough of the spice. And now here we use salt and pepper. It's just crazy and unacceptable. You mentioned Abhyanga. I want to make a case for that as well. That's doing a daily oil massage on your body. Your skin has a microbiome, right? And your body makes sebum, which is an oil. The bugs on your skin literally eat oil. They eat fatty acids. So when you put that oil on your skin, you're actually feeding the microbiome that actually supports the function of your skin. So it doesn't just look good, it actually functions as a detox organ and as something that will absorb moisture and kind of restore the balance in your body. So these simple things, not to mention that the oil creates a dampening effect on your sensory nerves. You have over 20 million sensory nerves just on your arm alone. And when you put oil on it, it dampens that experience. So it calms your nervous system. Many folks walk around feeling so stressed out, go, go, go. And I think doing a daily Abhyanga, putting some of that on your body every day in the morning, it just creates a calming effect. So you stay in that, I like to call it the eye of the storm, that you stay centered in your day. So thanks for bringing that up. These are simple things, but these are the things that when you, and it doesn't take long to do it. I do my Abhyanga in the shower. I use a very little bit of, we have a body butter I use, and I use very little bit, and I put it on in the shower. And it's a very simple procedure, but it's something that is so critically important because this organ is the biggest one, our skin, so that's really important.
Can I say one more thing about Abhyanga? It's such a powerful skin. Your skin is such a powerful channel of consumption, and sometimes as we age, the digestive power suffers. But the skin, if its metabolic abilities are still alive, and Abhyanga does that, there is so much more nourishment than you can get through the skin, and even go to the deeper tissues. So you're right. Besides the microbiome being lipophilic, which is everywhere, all our microbiome likes this moisture in our system. That calming our nervous system, oxytocin release, right? People talk about how touch releases oxytocin release. And I'm like, just it's so easy when, especially when women are perimenopausal and menopausal, and their digestion is suffering. I'm like, nourish yourself through the oils on your body.
Beautiful. Let's talk about your lunch. Give us an example of a warm and moist lunch.
So anything you want to eat can be made warm and moist, right? So people assume that when they come to me, they will be prescribed khichdi 7 days a week. Completely untrue, right? I'd say khichdi is warm and moist, amazing. Mujadara, right? Middle Eastern, as warm and moist. Mujadara has brown lentils, it has rice, it has a cinnamon stick, it has other spices. Do mujadara. If you want to eat Mexican rice, like we eat a Mexican, these are all my meals, by the way. So we eat a Mexican bowl. I eat a Mexican bowl, which has black beans, of course, everything done fresh, spice. It has a little bit of rice, lots of veggies, spinach thrown into it. It's delicious. So most of my lunches are usually rice-based. I use a short grain-aged rice. Most of my lunches are rice-based. They have a lentil or a bean. So either it's black beans mostly or other forms of lentils, because I grew up eating plenty of lentils. My body loves them. It's always spiced, and I choose the spices. Yes, according to the season, but also what pairs well with that food in terms of taste. So I tell people, like, just go all out. There's so many spices. And a good spice is that which is not going to be really sharp on your tongue, but it still is in the spice aisle of the grocery store. So, like, start playing with that. So these are all my lunches: the Mexican bowl, the mujadara. Oh, today I'm eating lentils and rice. So I grew up eating this one particular yellow lentil, which I love, with rice. And that's like my Monday morning meal with a side of veggies. So it's
Right.
some form of this. It's some form of creating a bowl, but I pick the cuisine that I want to eat. You don't have to be married to Indian foods, is one of those big things. My dinner is always light. I know you don't ask me for dinner, but my dinner is always lighter than lunch because, of course, your digestifier, is not. We're diurnal mammals. The sun is setting. Our digest, everything, all our digestive enzymes look different. At that point, our body is more resistant, is more insulin resistant. So I eat a smaller dinner and an earlier dinner, but my lunch is my indulgence.
Beautiful, beautiful. That's a great segue into the circadian rhythms, which you talk about in your book as well. And I love it. You talk about it as a solar cycle, the daytime cycle, and a lunar cycle, the nighttime cycle. So let's talk about, that kind of what we call, dinacharya, which is the things that we should do at different times of day based on when our biological clocks are syncing up with the circadian rhythms, which are literally driving those particular biological clocks for digestion or sleep or thinking or whatever. Talk to me about that.
Right. So of course, and I like to tell people that, hey, don't believe me. Let's make this observation. And as diurnal mammals, right, we sync with the clock of the sun. Sun is when our active period is. We don't have the vision of tigers. Our pupils don't, our eyesight doesn't work in the dark. So super clean, clear evidence that we're diurnal mammals. And we look outside to know what's happening inside. And the only reason why I like to explain this concept in this manner is because it sticks by people can make these observations rather than a prescription. So outside in the morning, if you were to wake up and walk outside on barefoot on grass, you would notice that it's dewy and it's wet. And that's the first part of the day from 6 a.m. to 10 a.m. And of course, given where you live, this can be slightly different, but this is a great starting point just to think about those first morning hours. When it's wet and dewy outside, it's wet and dewy inside. And that's why very often people wake up with that experience of nasal congestion, if you're prone to it, eye boogers, a little bit more saliva in your mouth, a little thick coating, your joints are stiff because the joints feel much more padded. So we are feeling as sluggish as the earth is. Great time in the morning to get that system fired up. So, in terms of activity, to get that exercise, to get your body moving, and in terms of breakfast, to consume something warm and like you said, warm, and then you can bring in your spices. So, great time for exercise, great time to bring in something warm and spiced. As the sun peaks, I mean, even plants cannot conduct photosynthesis without the sun being at its peak. So, forget it, we cannot digest unless we have that heat outside and inside. Between 10 and 2, as our digestive juices are now alive and our body is fired up. Of course, the time for the most, anywhere in the world, whether offices, work starts at 8 a.m. or work starts at 9 a.m. or 10 a.m. Between 10 and 2 is the most productive, like collaborative work, right? Outside in the world work that happens because your mind is the most, the morning, the wee hours of the morning are differently. Your mind, it goes more inward, but this is when your mind can go more outward and you can get collaborative work done. So really go get your work done. I tell people in that afternoon, 10 to 2. But what happens is that as the digestive heat starts to build up, people can get hangry if you don't give it food, because it's anger, it's hunger, and you become hangry. So great time to indulge in whatever you want. When people are like, oh, I want to eat this, I want to eat that. I'm like, what you fantasize, don't deprive, fantasize. So if you want to eat a chocolate cake at 6 p.m., don't deprive yourself, but fantasize that you're going to eat it during lunch because lunch is the time that your body is the most forgiving. I'm not suggesting that you go out there and make these choices, but if at all you do, lunch is that time where you can afford the most. I eat my biggest meal, but I eat a fully balanced meal at lunch. I get most of my work done between 10 and 2. After 2, between 2 and 4, sorry, between 2 and 6, what happens outside is things start to get windy, right? The experience of the sun, because the sun begins to set, there's a natural experience of wind on the planet. Same thing happens in our bodies, right? We see people at 3:34 stretching at their desks, yawning. We have the identical experience as outside. Great time to start slowing down for the day, ideally. If you can't afford it, I say that, have you have a morning routine, evening routine? Have like a 5 minute 3 o'clock routine where you do a little bit of breath work, maybe get a mug of tulsi or peppermint tea, something that wakes you up. If you still need to stretch your day a little bit longer, maybe a date or two, if you like eating dates. And then after the hours of six, you know, around the hour, six is when your digestive system, given the fact that if you're living in a place where the days and nights are pretty much equal, six is when your digestive system really says, okay, goodbye. I want to go, you know, I want to set. So really start slowing down, dimming the lights. That earthy energy between 6 and 10 really becomes alive. Everything becomes earthy, a little bit more grounded, a little bit more settled. So great time to introspect. Light dinner at 6 o'clock. Hopefully, no food after that. If at all, I tell people have a warm cup of cooked milk or half a cup of cooked milk, maybe diluted. 10 o'clock, great time to get into bed because between 10 and 2, that internal repair begins, which today, you know, modern doctors and scientists are really amazed by what happens in the body between the hours of 10 and 2, where your melatonin peaks, your body goes into deep repair. There's this growth hormone that comes back into play, and your body's building new cells. What a great opportunity to heal between those hours because your body is so set for that. So as close to 10 as you can get into bed. Let your body be awake, let your body be deep in deep sleep till 10 and 2. After 2 o'clock, sleep does become lighter. But if you continue to sleep, more magic happens because real new cells get generated during that time. As morning hours, you know, as you get into 4:30, 5, 6, that point, the body feels clean and clear. The nervous system has processed, you know, there's thoughts also create debris. The thoughts have been processed. Metabolic repair has happened. Your body is ready to wake up. And in those wee hours of the morning, 4:35, if you do find yourself awake, I tell people, because of the space created, anxiety can set in because your nervous system now has space. So if you're awake, you'll think of the worst. And if that happens, wake up and have a meditative practice, have a chanting practice, do something where we can use this newly created energy not to worry about yourself and the world and everything possible, but instead to channelize that energy into a more introspective grounding exercise. And this is pretty much the six cycles of the day. I love that Ayurveda understood circadian rhythms before I think the word was really officially coined. And not only that, not just as day and night, as six distinct parts of the day that you can experience yourself. And living in this rhythm, even for 3 weeks, I've seen that people notice such a drastic difference. In fact, the whole planet is full of rhythms, the rotation of the earth, the revolution, everything is a rhythm. Breath is a rhythm. So it's only natural and commonsensical for us to just even try it for just 3 weeks and see what the magic that happens.
No, I love this. It's such an important thing. And I always say when I would teach Ayurveda that I spent the first 20 years of my practice just teaching people how to stop, relax, and have a big lunch in the middle of the day, you know, and start recognizing that there are these natural circadian rhythms that we ignore, and how important it is to go downstream with these rhythms of nature as opposed to plowing upstream. Most people feel exhausted at the end of their day. The reason is because they're fighting against the grain. And this is such a beautiful, simple way. And I've been studying circadian medicine science for a very long time and watching the science slowly come back towards what Ayurveda has been saying for thousands of years. And the reason why the science is there is because, to dive a little bit deeper, is because the circadian rhythms come from the cycles of the sun. So in the morning time, if I could just go into this for a quick sec, in the morning time, the light is predominantly infrared light. As long as the shadow that the sun makes on your body is longer than you are tall, you're getting mostly red and infrared light. Infrared light penetrates your cells, activates your mitochondria, and gets you ready for the day. It gives you that kapha energy to strength to go dig ditches and plow fields in the morning. Your muscles are stronger. It protects your skin from the coming UV radiation in the middle of the day. It boosts your immunity. It gets you ready for the day. It gets you out of that damp dew that you sit on the grass. It swabs all that up and gets the metabolism active. It's the infrared light that creates kapha. And then when the UV radiation takes place in the middle of the day, that is a pitta-provoking ray. It's going to heat up your digestion, strengthen your body, get your body active. But it's also very important to know that the Nobel Prize in 1901 was won by studies on the benefits of UVA radiation, the one we paint sunscreen on to protect. So, I mean, this is something that we've lost sight of, that the sun is important, every aspect of the sun. It's just not, you don't want to be lying in it and baking in it. And that midday UV radiation stimulates our digestive fire, which is so critically important, which is now science. And then that's, and which is really neat, I love about this, because you said the wind comes in the afternoon. Well, where does the wind come from? The wind comes from the UV radiation hitting the earth, heating the earth up, creating evaporation. The evaporation creates wind, and that wind is the vata. That is the wind that comes. That's why we have a vata time of day. And that wind is our nervous system, activating our nervous system. We can think better. As long as we put gas in the tank in the middle of the day, the brain is going to become active in the afternoon, and it's going to demand fuel. But if you put a power bar, in your stomach for lunch, you're going to crash and burn, be thinking about Starbucks and chocolate and whatever in the afternoon. That's why people crash and burn. And I would always tell my patients, when I would teach Ayurveda, I would always say to my students, the first thing you should ask your patient is, how do you feel between 2, 3, 4, and 5 in the afternoon? Are you bonking, need a nap, craving Starbucks, needing chocolate, need an injection? You can't get home without getting a cup of coffee, because otherwise you'll fall asleep in the car. You know, these are simple things, and you said it so beautifully. And there's so much more to that, but I wanted to kind of dive into the science behind what you're saying, because it's not just like, everybody says, there's real science behind this. And there's an understanding of that science, and the science comes from the planet and the sun that we depend on. And we don't connect with that much. And that's what Ayurveda really is. It's understanding how we are connected to these rhythms. The rhythms are these cycles of nature that we have to connect with. Birds fly south, whales migrate. We also have rhythms that are changing dramatically. We just ignore them. And that's, we pay a price for that.
Exactly. And you know, no wonder hormonal imbalance, which is just essentially our body's way of creating rhythms, is releasing these hormones and neurotransmitters. And I'm not surprised that hormonal imbalance is such a symptom of so many chronic conditions today. It starts there. It's because we've gone off rhythm. Rhythm, hormones are your body's language of trying, hormones and neurotransmitters of creating those rhythms. When we live a lifestyle that's so anti-rhythmic, that's such a natural outcome of that. And you know, what I love is how much Ayurveda relies upon the understanding of the macro to understanding the micro. So, you know, like my 12-year-old will be like, okay, she understands. Like, mom, I understand that the fact that this is evening, it's getting so windy today. Are you sure we should do this? Or it's morning time and it's so hot. You can actually experience these things, you know, like sometimes she'll yawn and she's like, mom, I think I have a lot of vata in my body in the middle of the day. So even though it's a simple, silly connection, it starts there. It starts at your subconscious level. And I say what you've taken in so deep, what you've taken in as information is great. What you make knowledge out of it, amazing. But when you live a life, it becomes wisdom. And once it becomes wisdom, the choices are effortless, you know? So I'm a lover of Sanskrit, and yet I've tried my best to make my practice jargon free and make it experiential. From wanting to use only Sanskrit when I started, I was like, I just love this and I want to just use this. But I'm alienating people from really the experience their own body is having. So I love that Ayurveda relies so heavily on just human logic, understanding, comprehension. And then if you try it out, I tell people, you tried so many diets, keto, Atkins, you've left every part, you know, like we are juicing ourselves out of life. I said, give this 3 weeks. So simple. You pick the cuisine you want. Just eat a heavier lunch, lighter dinner. You live, you know, you meet your friends however you want to meet your friends. Just make sure that you're doing it, you know, you're planning things. I even help people with what kind of social outings to plan at what time if you insist on doing it at all hours. And you give that life 3 months and see what magic happens. Sorry, 3 weeks and see. You know, it's usually 3 weeks. I feel like 3 days you'll notice something. 3 weeks, 3 months. And then if you're here for 3 years, the chances are you will be, you know, you never have to rely upon anything else for your own well-being.
You know, you were taught in the Guru Kula style, where you actually learned from your grandfather. And this is, I think, one of the best ways, which I think is why you speak the knowledge in such a practical way, because you were taught in a practical way. That's how Ayurveda was. It was the science of life. It was the science of how to live. I was fortunate enough to go to India and study from my teacher, and I followed him around like a puppy dog for a year and a half studying, and I was learning pulse diagnosis. And I want to share this real quick because, and we talked about this on an Instagram Live a little while ago, but when you actually take your pulse, the thing that blew me away, which got me into Ayurveda, was the fact that I could actually feel because you have vata, pitta, kapha fingers, you know, that you can feel in your pulse. That's how you determine the balance one way. And you could actually feel the vata pulse increasing during the vata time in the afternoon, the pitta pulse increasing in the pitta time in the afternoon, and in the morning time, the kapha pulse would increase. And all of a sudden, I was like, you got to be kidding me, right? Like, I can actually feel
Beautiful.
that my body is changing with these natural rhythms. And just like the birds are flying south and the whales are migrating, we're connected to that. And we can actually have some radar on that as well. So it's not just sort of some like mind-boggling concept that why do the birds fly south this time of the year as we speak, right? Like, what's really going on? We have, as a human being, the ability to perceive subtle energy just in the same way that these birds in the forest fly south for. And just like you said in the very beginning, we're so attracted to the outside world. Our senses are only going in an outward direction to get that stimulation and dopamine and reward. And if we would just take a minute, a couple of times a day, and still the nervous system with a meditation, with some breathing, or with an Abhyanga, be more self-aware in your life, you begin to start to explore the power of your own silence. You know, the Ayurveda concept that the more, which I love this, and this is the thing that I love about Ayurveda more than anything else, is that the more subtle it is, the more powerful it is. These circadian rhythms, we can't see them. We can't see the sun rays changing from infrared to UV radiation. We can't see the circadian rhythms coming and going. We can't see our microbiome, but they're doing everything. Without them, we're screwed, right? So it's such so the why, you know, this is a like you said, like an ask to have people start to realize that the real joy, the real power, the real experience of life is not out there. It's on the inside. And our culture is just doing everything else to make money on you, to take you outside, as opposed to you realizing that you can do this on your own for free and explore your inner space, your inner joy. And what we're really here to actually be is loving and giving and kind beings, because we know that that is the thing that runs us. I was teaching a seminar many, many years ago, and I was talking about love and how we're really naturally loving beings, and that's the nature of us is to love. And well, somebody raised their hand and said, how do you know that? You have any science behind that? And at that point, I didn't. But I've since written many articles on the science of
Love
when you
it.
actually give and love and care for others, as opposed to only needing from the outside world to get approval and appreciation and satisfaction. And when you can actually really be willing to open yourself up to, you know, looking through the window of compassion and understanding of what's going on in the outside world, and let something more delicate and more vulnerable out. This makes you live longer. It changes your microbiome. It changes your epigenetics, so your genetic code stops breaking down significantly. The list and the science just goes on and on and on and on. And that's really fundamentally what you're talking about, is get this body into balance so you actually feel good in your skin. You don't need to go outside to get happiness. You're actually so comfortable in your own skin, the natural inclination is to go within. And then explore that inner space. And then, like I said, be the eye of the storm and live in that inner experience of composure and calm and silence. And then the bigger the calm, the more powerful your winds will be in life. And you can make a massive dent, as you are making a massive dent in your life, in your career, things that you're doing. It's really impressive. You know, I think it's amazing what you're doing, and I just thank you. I want you to keep going. You've got tons of energy, and keep doing your thing. Now, there's a ton more in your book. I mean, you've got a 28-day healing program. There's so much more to talk about. There's, you know, but you know, in the last few minutes that we have, tell me what you want to talk about more. What's the messages that need to be said here?
You know, I actually want to expand a little bit upon what you said, and just really, I think you really beautifully summed it up. Like, this is really that once you balance, and I call it climates, I'm going to say once you restore your inner climate, there is no other way to live, and everything around you, people are nervous to go within because they feel it will lead to a disconnection with the world outside. But it leads to the ultimate connection with everything around you. And, like you said, that's when you're able to really make a dent. And even when we're exploring, like you talked about the feelings of love, compassion, so warm and moist. Part of my work is I systematically work with people and I say, hey, let's notice all the times in the day where you either felt sluggish, right? Because of an event outside, or hot and dry when you start to feel trigger. And then we bring tools. I actually work with them to bring tools to regulate and come back to warm and moist. And these are tools from, everything from Vedic psychology to Ayurveda to yoga to really even just holistic psychology. And we say we use tools. And when you are in that warm and moist place, where you're in the present moment, when you're doing and being merged, when you lose sense of time and space, you're nothing but love. You're dissolved in that moment. And magic happens, that alignment. You already know. Those are the moments in which you see the most powerful things have happened when you were caught off guard because you were so into immersed into what you're doing. So, for so many years, I was so, oh, love, have compassion. And it was so difficult for me till I realized that it's really about cultivating that inner climate, identifying everything that takes me away from that, and then just coming back to it, undoing the dial on it. And the one more thing that I love that you talk about, the subtleness, right? I'm like the breath, the pulse and the breath don't lie. And the breath does not lie. And while it's amazing to have science around it, but I'm saying even today, this moment, before you can do your research for the listeners out there, you know that if you're in a car accident, your breath will shorten. You're rushed. If you're speaking to somebody who has this gasping breath, something is going on. Your breath does not lie. And even the breath changes from morning to night, which nostril is active. Like your right nostril is more solar, your left is more lunar. You can use simple breath practices several times a day to come back to that warm and moist space. So it doesn't have to be complicated. It doesn't have to be difficult. There are many, many tools, even music, ragas. Certain ragas will stimulate certain neurotransmitters to keep your body in a certain state. So my book, right, and the other work I do is about really systematically getting people to undo themselves within so they can really do more in the world outside. Is that to simplify the way they live? And the 21-day plan in the book allows people to use these principles of the circadian rhythm, of the inner climate, and of growth, transformation, and decline in all areas of life over a period of, like I said, 3 weeks, 21 days. And you get a chance to notice and witness firsthand that if you do this systematically, one by one by one, understanding the science, making your own choices according to the principles, no prescriptions at all. And you see what happens and how you feel towards the end. There's about more than 3,000 people who worked in with this model in my group programs, in my individual programs. And each day we are amazed at the breakthrough. Everybody will have a different breakthrough when they come back home to themselves. And then the ability and the desire without exhaustion that you can do outside, because you're doing and being is one, then you're doing in the state of being is really remarkable. And I feel so grateful to have this science, by our side, Ayurveda, yoga, and really to create ease. The idea is not to complicate your life, the idea is to simplify your life.
Wow. The book is Your Body Already Knows. And I highly encourage everybody to get that book. Nidhi, thank you so much. Is there any other way? Can you let us know what your website is? People can go to you to find you there as well.
Find me on nidhipandya.com. Also, super easy, nidhi.me. They take you to the same place, basically. So whatever you remember is great. So find me on my website. I'm very excited about my book. It's what I found the best way to simplify my life and so many others that I worked with. I'm not going to ask you to get to the farm, but just more in touch with yourself, and I'll teach you how through the book.
Beautiful. Nidhi, thank you so much for being here and thanks for everything you're doing. And hopefully we'll have you back again. I'm sure you have another book in you as well. So I'm sure we'll be seeing a lot of you.
Thank
Thanks so
you
much.
so much. Thank you so much.
Hi, everybody. I just want to take a minute and tell you what we do here at lifespa.com. I've been in practice now for 40 years, 38 of them have been practicing Ayurvedic medicine full time. For the last 20 years, I've been writing articles and doing videos on the ancient medical wisdom of Ayurveda with the modern science. You know, if something's been around for 1,000 years, still practiced today, and you have modern science to prove it, boy, I really feel like that's something we should all be taking a look at. And that's what we do at lifespa.com. And all that information is for free. So you just go to lifespa.com and search in your health topic, and you'll get the information, the article that you need, hopefully that will help you. While you're there, check out our Ayurvedic store. You can get there through lifespa.com or go to store.lifespa.com. And there we have all of our organic Ayurvedic herbs, organic skincare line, more books, tapes, knowledge that we give you is all there at our store. All of our cleansing kits are there in our store. All of our herbs are whole herbs with the natural occurring microbiome, the way it came out of the soil. And that's critically important, because if I took the bugs out of you, you'd be completely different. We take the bugs away from a plant, like sterilizing, making an extract, or spraying your food with pesticides, you lose significant benefit of that plant. And that's why we use the whole plant with the natural occurring microbiome. So check us out, learn more about what we're doing here at lifespa.com, and we'll see you again.
This recording is brought to you by LifeSpa, where ancient Ayurvedic wisdom meets modern science. Get access to free health video newsletters by Dr. John at LifeSpa.com. These statements have not been evaluated by the FDA. These products are not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.